You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour two's underway. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Chris Trapasso is the NFL draft writer for CBS Sports, and he joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Chris, pumped to have you back on the show. It's that time of year again, my friend. I guess let's start with the Tua hype train, which is leaving the station. All the medicals are coming back positive. Is there any way he could go first overall?
I don't think he'll go first overall. I think the Bengals have kind of been locked into Joe Burrow probably since the end of the national title game, or maybe even before that. I don't think, because, yes, you're right that the medicals, everything has been positive with Tua, but the fact that we didn't see him down the stretch in some big games for Alabama, with him getting injured, and it's not like he's a player. Like, if he was Tua Tagovailoa, and in terms of the accuracy and the production and the ability to move inside the pocket, and then he had the physical attributes of, say, Justin Herbert or Jacob Eason in this draft class, if he was way bigger than Joe Burrow, had a stronger arm, I think that question would be a valid one and that we would be really exploring that. I mean, it's still a good question, but I think ultimately he's going to go somewhere from pick two to pick five in this draft. Whether a team like the Dolphins will move up, that kind of remains to be seen, of course, but I think there's enough of a positive momentum for him now on the medical side that he won't fall any further than outside the top five or six.
So, Chris, this is kind of the drum I've been beating for Redskins fans, right? Like, Chase Young is obviously an elite prospect. He's great. Nobody's saying that he's not. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point, there's no production that would match the amount of hype that he's getting. I mean, is it like 30 sacks a season for the next 10 years or just something ridiculous, right? How much better as a prospect is he than, say, another guy that's the best at his position, like a Jeff Okuda or Isaiah Simmons, a linebacker from Clemson? What's the gap between how good Chase Young is versus the other best at their positions in this draft?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that there is close to as big of a gap between Jeffrey Okuda and the number two corner as there is between Chase Young and the second or third best edge rusher. It's a pretty top-heavy edge rusher class. The corner group is a lot deeper. There's, like, right now going into the combine, if you look at mock drafts, look at big boards from different draft analysts, and you'll see that there's really no consensus number two cornerback, but Okuda to everyone is the number one guy, and I totally agree with that. And to your first point, kind of managing those expectations for whichever team picks Chase Young, and right now obviously that would be the Redskins as the front runner, will have to be very, very important, and I think it'll be very difficult for fans to do that because there has been so much hype for him, you know, for 2 years now, and at his size at Ohio State, playing in so many big games, following Nick Bosa. Yeah, he would truly have to have a Nick Bosa-type impact, if not better, as a rookie to kind of live up to the hype. But at corner, I think Jeffrey Okuda is right there. There's a huge gap from him at number one and the number two cornerback.
What type of player do you view Chase Young to be? I believe you got him second behind Burrow on your big board.
Yeah, I've said for the longest time that he's similar to the Bosas, but he's in more of a Myles Garrett-type body. And actually, Chase Young just measured in today, was a little bit lighter than Myles Garrett was, who was just an absolute freak at the combine in 2017. Like 264, not crazy long arms for being like 6'4" and that size. So I think he's pretty close to the Bosas, which I know that at this point, and kind of to your other point about, you know, just how many or how much expectation he has and how much hype, I think a lot of people would say, oh, he's way better than the Bosas. But the Bosas were so polished with their hands and just gaining ground with their feet as they were beating offensive tackles with their hands. Chase Young has that same style, and I think the coaching at Ohio State, you know, that's kind of a testament to that. I don't think he's as bendy as Nick Bosa or Joey Bosa when they were coming out. I think he gives you more power because he is a little bigger, and I just think he has more power in his lower half. But you're not going to see him as often really tightly bend the edge, you know, burst off the snap, you know, that's just incredible. But he's such a highly touted prospect, and I view him, you know, very highly, obviously, like the rest of, you know, kind of the world is right now, because he can do everything. He can win with power. He can win with pretty good speed. He's not stiff. He's not someone that's going to get pushed past the quarterback. So I would kind of put him right behind the tier of the Bosas, maybe up there a little bit ahead of Bradley Chubb, who I had as my number one player 2 years ago. Just that power rusher that knows how to win, not only with his strength, but with pass rushing moves too.
Chris Trapasso is with us. We love having him on. He makes us smarter. CBS Sports draft analyst. Who's the guy, and I'm kind of leading you here because I'm looking at your mock draft right now, who's the guy that's going to benefit from workouts and fly up draft boards?
Well, I think the obvious one is Henry Ruggs from Alabama. I mean, we're all going to see, and I mean, not just the media members and draft analysts, but the GMs and the scouts are going to see 4-2 something, probably low 4-2s from Henry Ruggs. See that he has over 10-inch hands. He has like Odell Beckham size hands, and he's very twitchy. He's not just a linear guy that can only run one or two routes, made some good contested catches. And you're going to look at that whole profile and say, man, this guy is absolutely electric. He can get open. He can make difficult catches at times. I think he is going to be in the consideration to be the first wide receiver off the board, which at this point seems crazy. It's all about Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb, but I think Henry Ruggs. And then I really think Tristan Wirfs, the tackle from Iowa, he was number one on Bruce Feldman's freaks list before the college football season as just like the overall biggest freak of an athlete in college football. He was breaking records in the weight room at Iowa as a 20-year-old sophomore in 2018. So he's very strong, had a very good weigh-in yesterday, has plenty of length to play tackle. And I think he's going to be one of the best athletes, if not the most well-rounded athlete in what is a very, very good offensive tackle class at the top. So I think those two guys, totally different sizes, different positions, they're going to really boost their already pretty solid draft stocks after the combine.
I'm going to just say that this is the deal that happens. I know that it's probably unrealistic, but I'm just trying to give Redskins fans an indication of what might be possible. So instead of taking Chase Young at 2, let's say they make the trade back with Miami and they get their top 10 pick, they get the 18th pick, and then they get a second-round pick or something like that. Give me 3 prospects in those ranges that they could get so that we could kind of juxtapose that with Chase Young. You see what I'm asking?
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty hard to kind of peg, you know, like what they would get in a trade. And I've said this, just a quick aside, that the team trading up with Washington to pick Tua, you know, you kind of have to pay that quarterback tax, so to speak. But then the Redskins could also say, hey, we also want to add a second tax that we're passing on Chase Young. So I think, you know, they could get a really, really big haul, even if they are only moving down 3 or 4 spots in the draft. So they're in a good situation, very, very good situation, if they do want to trade down and add some more draft capital. I think Kalyvon Chaisson, the edge rusher from LSU, just had a really good weigh-in, over 250 pounds at 6'3". Just talked about a lot of the things with Chase Young, that he knows how to win in multiple ways. Speed to the outside, converts speed to power, has a lower center of gravity. Just a really, really good athlete. He's, you know, very quick off the snap and knows how to use his hands, inside move, outside move, anything you want from him. You see it on film in the SEC. He's only 20 years old. I think him You know, in the middle of the first round, if you want kind of that next tier of an edge rusher. And then later in the first round, definitely, I think there will be an offensive tackle there that regardless of what happens with Trent Williams, I think if you want to build around Dwayne Haskins, who's not the most mobile guy, you need better pass protection. And whether that be Josh Jones from Houston, maybe even Andrew Thomas from Georgia, who seems to be slipping a little bit better of a run defender than he is in pass protection, but his film is pretty boring to watch. I mean, in the SEC, he was blocking everything. Some moments of being a little bit off balance, very long arms, very athletic, very powerful. And then at the top of the second or, you know, in the middle of the second, I think, like I said before, cornerback, there are going to be a ton of quarterbacks. That's like the ripe spot to pick. If you're not getting Jeffrey Okuda or maybe Christian Fulton from LSU, there's so many really good cornerbacks that are, I think, are going to test well. Jeff Gladney from TCU, Damon Arnett from Ohio State, Josiah Scott from Michigan State. There's like a big chunk, A.J. Terrell from Clemson, who probably won't go in the first round, but are going to be starters right away and be available, you know, inside maybe the top 40 or the top 50.
Chris, great info as always, buddy. Appreciate the time this morning.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, buddy.
Chris Trapasso, read his work, CBSSports.com. We're Grant and Danny. Next, Ross Tucker says the NFL should partner up with the XFL. He's got a bunch of reasons why he thinks that would make sense. Get into that on The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Huge win for the Caps last night. Man, did they need that. They were up 3-0. They blew a 3-0 lead. It was 3-3 going to overtime. Then they won in a shootout. Braden Holtby has responded to having lost his starting job momentarily to Ilya Samsonov. He was great again. 30 saves, 33 shots, a .909 save percentage, and then made some ridiculous saves, including a great glove save in the shootout. But a couple things I loved about the Caps game last night before we get into Ross Tucker's piece on the XFL and the NFL and why those two leagues should get together. Number one, Ilya Kovalchuk, flying around, has a lot of game left.
That's a spry 36-year-old right there, huh?
For a 36-year-old, he made a big difference right away. Now, he had a turnover that led to a goal late in the game, and there's a couple moments he probably would like to have back. So it wasn't all, you know, rainbows and sunshine in his first game. But the whole point of bringing him in was to help fix their bottom six. They'd gone since like January 5th without getting a goal from their fourth line, and their third line wasn't good enough offensively. They moved Richard Ponick down to the fourth line. He had a couple chances last night. He had one of his best games in weeks, and the fourth line was great. Dowd had an assist and five shots. Garnet Hathaway scored a goal, got into a fight. I thought that trio was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The third line with Haglund, who had two grade A opportunities and got robbed a couple times. Strong performance in net for Winnipeg. But you look at the third line performance with Kovalchuk and with Eller. Those guys look like they've been playing together for years. I loved the way the bottom six, I think they had 15 total shots last night, performed. It was the best performance by that collection of players
in a while, yeah,
in weeks and weeks and weeks. There was a lot to like about the new look capital Ilya Kovalchuk,
and that was one of the huge reasons early on in the season. Remember, I was asking you, like, when was the last time the fourth line was this good? Well, that kind of went away, didn't it? That dried up
the goal
a bit.
Scoring for sure went away, but I mean that line still brings so much energy. But
oh,
you're
sure.
Right, they just haven't been the same.
Yeah, but at one point it was like, I don't say they were carrying the team, but it was amazing, the production. You go, this is the fourth line, good heavens. And they needed a little bit of a shakeup, and I saw that. It's a testament to having a guy that's played in different systems and is a veteran and is super smart. There's no feeling out process. It's right away, I know exactly what I'm doing here. I know where to be, how to line up, where to get to, working seamlessly within a system after, what, one workout? Was he on the ice one time with the Capitals before he got a chance to go play? Looked like he'd been there for 10 years. That was cool.
The other note on the Capitals from last night, Alex Ovechkin was honored before the game for his 700th career goal. One of those games you would like to have had a ticket to because they had a cool celebration. They were giving things away throughout the night, including commemorative towels for Obi's 700th goal. He got honored with a great video.
Nice little montage.
The Caps do those videos just better than every other team.
They crush them.
Whoever makes those videos for the Caps, give them the biggest raise.
Be that man.
They're so good at that. They had messages from his parents, his baby, his dog, every player who's alive who has scored 700 career goals, all of his teammates who he's been around for years and years. It was just beautifully done, And I loved watching it. And Ovi, obviously, holding his kid next to his wife, who's pregnant, again on the ice with Ted Leonsis last night pregame. Got a big kick out of the video, which was great. But what was crazy was, so that celebration, and normally they drop the puck like it's 7:08 or so.
Uh-huh.
That celebration went from like 7:05 to about 7:10, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Game started at about 7:15. At 7:17, when they left the ice and like Ovi kissed his wife at 7:10 and they ended the celebration, like 6-7 minutes after that, Ovi scored a goal.
Yeah.
7:01. Like began cool. the right, journey right, right. to 800 on a baseball bat swing that would have made Dave Martinez impressed. He just always does that. He's just got this flair for the dramatic. It reminds me of Cal Ripken Jr. Everyone in the arena is there for him, and it takes him a minute 55 to reward everyone for coming for by scoring that goal. Like, he easily could have just not scored, had 3 shots on net, and called it a night. But there are just certain guys who always on their nights seem to step up. He's got whatever that is in spades.
Yeah, whatever, like, a very opening day Bryce Harperian. You know what I mean?
100%.
There's something to it.
Makes those guys special. All right, let's get to Ross Tucker's column in The Athletic. He wrote that for a better National Football League, the league should prop up and partner with the XFL. Now, note, he did not say for a better XFL, the two leagues should partner together. It goes without saying that the more involved the NFL is with the XFL, the better for the XFL.
You would think, right?
But his column was for a better NFL, the league should prop up and partner with the XFL. He says, granted, the NFL does not need the XFL or any other professional football league for that matter. That's been proven time and again as those other leagues have folded and the NFL has continued to grow in popularity. He goes on to write that that does not mean it shouldn't want the XFL to succeed, at least to the point where it is sustainable, and the NFL should strongly consider propping up the XFL and investing in the league's future. He says it's not about money necessarily. XFL owner Vince McMahon has plenty of that. It is about providing some support in terms of marketing and exposure that could allow the league to be the first of its kind to get over the hump and succeed for years to come. Nobody seems to know right now exactly what the XFL would need in terms of attendance or ratings to make it viable long term. He says the NFL should figure out a partnership that makes sense to help them get there because doing so would help improve the NFL itself. And then he broke this down into 4 categories where he thinks the NFL could actually benefit from a partnership with the XFL. So I'll run through them really quick, mm-hmm. and then we can react. He says, 1, player development. Says that's the biggest reason. With the NFL poised to shorten the preseason, teams have even less of an opportunity to see what young and or fringe players can do in an actual game environment. Not only that, but the proposed newest CBA is drastically limiting the amount of padded practices and time on the field. The idea being, if the schedule's done properly, and the NFL could have a say in that,
mm-hmm.
you could essentially use maybe the XFL as your ramp-up period in terms of game action for your NFL fringe talents. 2, the coaching pipeline. It's no secret that the Rooney Rule isn't really working. You have 3 black coaches out of 32 in the National Football League. Well, there are 3 black coaches in the XFL out of the 8 teams. He's saying that guys like Pep Hamilton or Winston Moss or Jonathan Hayes are getting invaluable experience and that it would really benefit and help the NFL just to have some of the minority coaches who they'd like to see as a head coach get some of the looks in this league.
Right.
He goes on to talk about officials training and vetting. We talk about officiating in the National Football League all the time. This could be a minor league operation for the officiating of games. See the way that with rules and things, technology, baseball implements things in the independent league
right.
of a professional baseball or in the minor leagues.
Electronic
now.
Strike zone, different
Absolutely.
Things that can be applied, yeah.
Which goes to the last one where he says rules and technology, where he talks about things like the working on the ability to be able to hear the reviews. You know, in the XFL, you haven't watched a single second of this, so you haven't seen this, but it's really, really cool and you're missing out, that during instant replay, you can hear the exchange between the referee and the guy on the microphone who's going over the review.
It is a cool idea.
And he's saying, hey, I got no catch here. His knee is down, but the ball's already on the sideline. Like, they go through the whole thing, and you know exactly why they call what they call. That transparency is great, and the league should just take that tomorrow and do that next season. So, like the last XFL, remember 19 years ago.
Right, Skycam and everything, yeah.
They took a bunch of things in terms of technology and rules. So those are the 4 he says. Rules, technology, officials, coaching, and player development. Your initial thought to the idea that the NFL should partner with the XFL?
It it would be nice. In other words, the multi-billionaire, multi, you know, times over billionaires that makes billions of dollars, where interest is higher than it's ever been, despite, you know, hand-wringing and fears over concussions or Kaepernick or whatever you want to go to, the league doesn't really need to do anything. But would it be good for the product? I think those reasons are obvious. The same way that it would be good for me to hire a personal trainer, hire a private chef, and have someone do my shopping, I probably can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, I could do that and have no money left over, but it would be good for me. You're not going to have me incentivized enough to do it, though. The NFL
but
is going to say...
But the NFL could do that, and they wouldn't notice any money being spent.
The NFL
is the equivalent of, like, a billionaire who could do whatever they want.
Well, they can, but billionaires don't like to spend money and not get more money out of it. That's not going to make the owners more money. That'll increase the quality of the product for the 53rd guy on a roster, and that's cute and all good.
If it helps you fix some officiating issues, if it advances your game technologically...
I don't think they care. I think they'll get the technology. They didn't have to pay the XFL for the Skycam. If something makes sense, they'll adopt it and just sort of
take it as their own.
Yeah. To me, this is one of those, I would love, if you're a football purist and you love it, like Ross does, like we do, I would love for the NFL to say, let's prop this up, let's partner, let's make this, we're connected. The XFL and the NFL are best
would
friends.
You
you're
watch
a minor
it
league
in that
system.
Regard?
It would make me more likely to, I would say. But the NFL, again, this, they're the king of everything. All the highest rated programs are NFL programs. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to move a muscle, and they'll still be the number one thing.
They don't have to, but I think there'd be a benefit to. I think they'd have more control over the things that right now they have no control over with the XFL. So just player development. If they wanted to alter the schedule based on the lack of time on the grass and preseason games, they wanted to move it closer to, say, the start of the NFL season, they could do that. If from a player development standpoint, just like the Nationals, let's say, when they traded for Trey Turner, he's now a quote-unquote Nationals prospect, but mm-hmm. he's in the Padres system. Well, the Nationals dictated terms to the Padres on how they wanted him groomed because he's quote-unquote in their system.
Right.
NFL front office executives and personnel all the way to the highest rung have a philosophy probably on developing players. They would get to dictate those terms to the XFL if they were involved financially and paying them money. I think the coaching pipeline thing I don't really buy because we're going to see, can Pep Hamilton coach or not? I mean, if he's a really, really good coach, he'll get an NFL job. Maybe not as a head coach right away, but he'll be back as an offensive coordinator. And so I think you can see these guys as head coaches, see the programs that they run. I think you don't need to be partnering with them in that regard, but it certainly wouldn't hurt. The one that I think we can double down on here is the rules and the technology, which I know what you're saying, you kind of steal some of the technology. But it doesn't explain the rules part of it,
mm-hmm.
where you could pull a baseball and say, hey, XFL, we're thinking about these five things next year. You do these five things, and let's see what works and what doesn't as our testing ground. You're our guinea pig. I think that's where the NFL sinking some money into this would make a lot of sense. But what do you guys think at home? 800-636-1067, as you drive around in your cars, I'm wondering what you're thinking about if the NFL would benefit at all from this. Obviously, it'd be great for the XFL. Does the NFL get anything out of spending money and partnering with the XFL, yes or no? 800-636-1067, talking about Ross Tucker's piece in The Athletic on Grant and Danny. You get $1 for every minute that you plank before you collapse onto the ground under your stomach. How long do you think you could hold a plank?
What would I do with $2? What would I do with it? I'd probably go buy a snack to reward myself. I know where you're going with this. Is it about the woman who set the record?
It's not a woman.
Oh.
There's a guy named George Hood, who's a 62-year-old Marine veteran from Naperville, Illinois, who recently set the Guinness World Record for the longest abdominal plank. Take a guess at how long you think he planked for.
Because I saw the story. I think it's like 10 hours or something ridiculous.
8 hours.
Yeah.
15 minutes. 15 seconds.
So at 14 seconds, he's like, that's enough, and pulls the ripcord then?
This dude is 62 years old.
Yeah, it's just absurd. Just absurd.
I don't think I could plank for 30 seconds. In fact, I would bet a lot of money that I could.
You could do it right now.
If I had to plank for 30 seconds because, like, something terrible would happen to me otherwise, or, you know, like, you're like, okay, this is for the benefit of your family, then I could probably do it. But just, like, right now this second, I wouldn't want to plank
for
30 seconds.
I'll put the clock on right now.
I really have no interest.
You're fine?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Are you more comfortable sitting in your chair and not planking?
Yeah, I'd rather not plank.
Because I guarantee
you
could do it.
Do you want me to plank?
I'm not I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do.
Right,
but
I'll
I'm betting you could do it.
Let's give it a Tom's playing the music, so right, we might as well give it a
Grant is taking his headphones off. Now, you know proper plank position. Put your elbows to the ground, right? So Grant's getting down. Knees up and go. 1 second. Keep breathing. Most important thing is to keep breathing. Keep that back straight. You're at 8 seconds. You're doing awesome. Keep breathing. I think Grant's going to do this. He's at 10 seconds right now. How you feeling, buddy? He doesn't feel good. That's at 15 seconds. You're halfway there. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Living on a prayer. He's still planking. Still going. Still holding. Still holding. 22 seconds. You got it, buddy. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Done. 30-second plank. He's still going. He's still going. How are you still going? And he rested. Dude, that was awesome.
I mean, it's only 30 seconds.
You did it.
I did do it.
Yeah.
I think I probably... I could have maybe done a minute.
Yeah.
But 8 hours is not in the cards.
But think about if there's like some sort of giant prize or it's one of those like free, the president gets free tuition, right?
Okay.
You
could
do 2 minutes.
Yeah. If you put something on the line like that, that motivation, but like right there, I had no motivation to keep going. I needed to get to 30. I got to 30.
You got to 30.
It's over at that point.
Yeah.
If you put like, you got to get to 3 minutes in front of me and there's $100,000 if I do it. Maybe I end up doing it.
I thought that was pretty impressive, by the way.
I don't know.
Went for it?
I feel like most people could probably do a 30-second plank based on how easy that was.
But that's, well, I don't know if it's that easy. I mean, I'm just saying. You beat yourself up. You're like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And you nailed
it. I was skeptical that I would have pulled it off.
Who believed in you?
Your
buddy. Your buddy did.
All those days in the gym after the show with you.
The way you pushed me in the gymnasium. Because here's what always happens. I'm like, Grant, we're going to do this today. And you're like, I've already done it. You don't even come down with me.
That's a good point.
Like, you already worked out.
I come in the morning.
Yeah.
I generally get here right around 4, 4:30 in the morning.
Right. Passing Valdez and Drab as they get in.
I try to get like a 4 or 5 hour workout in.
Could you imagine working out for 4 hours,
really,
by the way?
Really grind.
What would you do after 40 minutes?
Or four, for that matter. I don't know. Yeah, I try to get 4 or 5 hours in and. Then I kind of wander up here.
You could be like the guy that I see all the time in the gym, the guy that I've dubbed the mayor, who I'm sure he works out. I'm sure that guy actually works out at some point. I just never see him do it. When he's in the gym, he just sort of goes from area to area, just sort of talking to each different person that he knows down there, you know?
And you're like, the sleeping guy, and he's the mayor.
Yeah, he's the mayor.
He's at his office right now, like two levels up or something in this building going, you remember, the sleeping guy. They call you in the gym.
This is how he talks to you. Now, that's the man that fell asleep. He lay down, and he fell asleep. He talks to his buddy Steve about the Wizards. He goes, what they need to do is trade everybody on the roster except for Bertans. Like, he's got great theories.
Does he want to get rid of Beal?
Oh, yeah. He wants to trade everybody.
Except for Bertans.
How many 6'10 guys can shoot like that?
But you've never talked ball with
him? No. He doesn't know what I do.
Unwilling to engage.
No, it's just that we've said hello to each other. He's a very nice man, but he's the mayor. He's like just so social down there. He talks to everybody. He's got like, he does this like that minor league kind of flirting, but if pressed, you would be able to say it's not flirting with one of the women that like does leg press.
Just enough flirting that he can't get in trouble.
He goes, oh, man, I'm tired, but watching you go makes me less tired. And you're like, what?
Well, that's not minor league flirting.
That's inappropriate.
That's just extremely weird and inappropriate.
But as you say, because you're doing such a good job, I'll now do my workout. I'm telling you, the mayor is great. Great character.
Well, I look forward to meeting the mayor someday.
Well, you're always down there. You'll see him.
Well, he's never in there from 4:30 to 9:30 when I'm doing my 5-hour workouts.
Yeah.
You should come with me and do one of my 5 hours. See if you can sweat with
me. See if I can handle it.
Sweat with me for those 5 hours. Real quick, category by category. Player development. Best way for the NFL to get something out of the XFL would be what? You know, we got a tweet from Guilo. He's talking about maybe having guys go to the XFL early, perhaps. Like, if there was a rule where you could leave college football after 2 seasons instead of 3, but the NFL still had the 3-year rule, maybe then you'd play in the XFL for a season as like a minor league deal, and then you go to the NFL after.
The NBA's starting to flirt with it with the G League route. Guys
exactly.
are doing that, yeah.
But it wouldn't have to be that everyone has to do that. Like, Joe Burrow could just stay at LSU for a third year and go straight to the NFL. The coaching pipeline, I don't know about you. I don't see where the NFL would have to pay any money to get anything out of the coaching pipeline. They're already going to get that.
To me, the NFL would have to change fundamentally for them to adopt this. In other words, you look at Major League Baseball, it's already been established. When you buy a team, you're also buying minor league affiliates and player development and pipeline. Same with the NHL. The NFL's never had it. They've got it for free with college football in their minds, right? Where they're going to get prospects. And yes, you lose out on development of the 47th guy on the roster and practice squads, but their stars are already ready-made and pre-done. It would take a fundamental sea change for them to do it.
The rules is the big one, and the technology. Hey, we're trying to get this chip that tells us if the ball crossed the goal line or not. Hey, we're trying to figure out the pass interference ruling. This is what we're going to do this year. You do it for a season, and then we'll see if it works, and we'll do it in the NFL after. I think those are the types of things that could make sense. Again, the story is in The Athletic if you want to check it out. Ross Tucker saying the NFL should partner with the XFL. We've got your double play coming up next. We're going blitzing around the Beltway at noon. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan.
Guys, Danny Ruya here from Appals at the St. James. There's no offseason at the St. James, the DMV's hottest destination for sports, wellness, and active entertainment. The St. James is a sports utopia. There's something for everybody there. So, for example, when I was there this past Saturday, I took advantage of the Premium Health Club. There's three levels, Tommy, three levels of weights. Top-of-the-line equipment, weights, different machines, dedicated personal trainers to help you achieve your body goals. Every new member gets two complimentary health assessments with a personal trainer. So I went Saturday to go work out. What did my son do? I got a six-year-old. What's he doing? Birthday party. This is the perfect place for a kid's birthday party. They can play in the Active Entertainment Center, climbing and bouldering walls, trampolines, VR games, a ropes course, and a massive water park. It's unbelievable. In fact, what they did for this birthday, they just used a portion of the field because all these kids love soccer. It was a fantastic afternoon, thanks to the St. James. With so much under one roof, you got to see it to believe it. Just visit thestjames.com to learn more and schedule a tour. That's thestjames.com. The St. James, welcome to your best.
Nationals, get you a double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Danny, I've got a TV show for you.
A Grant Paulson TV show recommendation?
And by you, I mean listeners who enjoy my Bachelor reviews and not Danny Ruye.
This is me unclicking my pen.
Ready?
Yep.
Love is Blind on Netflix. Love is Blind on Netflix. How large is your file on this television show?
0.0. I've never heard of it.
All right. Well, I'll give you a little bit of information then,
please,
if you don't mind. So, Nick Lachey and his wife host this show.
Jessica Simpson?
No, that's his ex-wife. This is her last name's Lachey. I don't know who she is.
Oh, okay.
It's just his current
Mrs.
wife.
Mrs. Lachey.
Ms. Lachey
yeah,
or Mrs. Lachey. Lachey?
She's a celebrity. Someone will tweet us and tell us who she is.
Lachey.
They host the show in that they introduce it at the beginning and then you really never see them much.
Then they just kick
after
rocks.
That. The show is actually an experiment. And it is somewhat fascinating. Now, you will hate the show.
Right.
But I hope you can at least appreciate the idea of this experiment. So, what they've done is they have acquired a few dozen singles who are between the ages of 24, is the youngest that I saw, and probably 35 or so.
Yeah, the blonde is the oldest. She's 34.
She's 34, right. And so, what they do is, Danny, they get these single men and women who all are at a point in their life where they would like to get married, but they can't find the one.
By the way, I love that Thommy just is ready just to catch you if you fall
think Thom
on this
hasn't
one.
Watched this show?
This is his wheelhouse.
This is Thom's one seed. This
He's
show.
Very serious.
As soon as I saw the trailer, I hit play and I watched every available episode.
He's very serious about it, too.
All right.
He's so,
so
focused on you.
Here's how this works, okay?
Yes.
The Let's say it's around, we don't know the exact numbers because you basically focus on the relationships that are ongoing. But let's say they get like somewhere between 10 and 15 girls and 10 and 15 men. They go to different sides of what is a big, lovely house, okay? They live in quarters with the people of their gender. They talk to them all the time. They hang out with them. But they are in this house where they go on these quote-unquote dates, and they blindly date people from the opposite sex. So they sit in these booths with a wall between them, and they get to know each other for all hours of the day. You can go on as many dates for as long as you want. So the idea is you can fall in love with these people. You're talking for hours and hours and hours, but you never see them. You don't know what they look like. You're not talking about physical appearance.
Oh.
The show is called Love is Blind because the idea is they're trying to figure out, can you meet and fall in love with someone and eventually get married to someone who you've never seen? The way that this works, Danny, is that when you propose to the person on the other side of the wall, you get to leave this house. You get to see them for the first time, and they send you on this gorgeous resort vacation, okay? What you don't know is that you're dating, at the start of this thing, as many as like 10 or 12 people. It's like Danny Rhea is trying to find his soulmate. He's sitting in these pods. 10 and 12 girls are coming in and out. He's talking to all of them. At first, you're interested in five. Then you're interested in two. Then you have a great connection with those two, and you pick one. Well, the couples that end up linking up and proposing to each other, the first one 5 days after meeting each other through this wall without having seen each other, now you get to see her. Now you go on this resort vacation. They all go to the same resort. So you're now meeting the couples who you also dated, basically, and you're seeing, oh, that guy's better looking than the guy that I chose. Or see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So it's very awkward when you get to this resort. But the point of this experiment is you fall in love. These people are like in tears talking about the deepest insecurities. They have these unbelievable connections. Then they see each other. Then they go to this resort. On the back end, they go back into their lives and live together. And now they're meeting families and parents. And some of these couples are now in interracial relationships for the first time ever. And the parents aren't feeling it and all kinds of different things.
Sure, dramatic.
You have 30 days from when you leave until your wedding date, which the show gives you a wedding of your dreams. And so the question is, which of these couples will withstand the rigors of life to actually go through with the marriage? So, it's pretty amazing.
Haven't we had enough?
And I got to tell you, the show itself is completely compelling. The experiment is fascinating. I hate some of the people on it. I really like.
You need villains. You need heroes.
Yeah, some of the people on it.
Faces and heels, Tommy.
Here is my one big observation, though.
All right.
Okay? The whole point of this show is, can you fall in love with someone you haven't seen before so that when you see them, it doesn't matter what they look like? And, Tom, you tell me if I'm wrong about this. I would say if there's 30 people in these houses, like 28 of them are really good-looking people.
Yeah, but it's not Bachelor level. They definitely looked at a headshot and said, okay, this person would fit on the show.
But there are no ugly people.
Like has it happened? Has it happened where some woman's talking to like a me and she's like, this guy's awesome?
No, but you're not bad looking. You like to be self-deprecating.
But you know, but I mean,
but no, I'm saying,
imagine
like,
if she's a smoke show, how disappointed
is
she?
There is no fat person. Like I would be.
That's what I'm asking. Is there anybody that's
40
like
pounds
gross?
Heavier than anyone else in the house? And I think of myself post EMP as like chunky, but like not terrible. There's no fat person. There's no ugly person.
Yeah, there's no ambush,
there's no person
right?
with like pimples on their face. Mm-hmm. They're just really good looking people. So the whole point of this is like, you can fall in love with anyone, except that they're all really good looking singles that are like 30 years old.
Yeah,
that's the part that's weird.
Every reveal, they always go, oh, wow, you're so good looking.
Yeah, right. They're like, I can't believe how lucky I am. And some of these chicks are fire. Mm. I mean, it's like these are the luckiest. Like they're just talking to this girl for 4 days. Now they're engaged to this. Yeah. Beautiful woman.
These really attractive women that just somehow, quote, can't find anybody. I really believe that.
I'm on to my fourth episode. I don't yet know what's going to happen. Thom's ahead of me.
Thom knows.
I can tell you, if you're looking for something to get you through the week until The Bachelor or some other terrible, trashy TV show like that that's immensely entertaining, Love is Blind could be your answer
on
Netflix.
It's a great Netflix watch.
How many mild wings is it?
Knowing that I'm getting like a trashy TV show, 7 out of 10 mild wings. Grant and Danny on The Fan. What's next?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.